Each of us has a unique career story to tell. For some, these fly high like rocket launches. For others, they're more like the game of chutes and ladders, with advances and setbacks along the way. Either way, we learn countless lessons from these experiences. And that's what we put into the spotlight here at Career Sessions Career Lessons. Join discussions featuring a variety of guests sharing their stories of ups and downs, as well as the secrets of their success and what drives them to continue moving forward. We break down the tools and resources that will help you establish your dream career and realize your professional goals. Here's your host, J.R. Lowry.
Hi, I'm J.R. Lowry, and this is Career Sessions Career Lessons, which is brought to you by Pathwise.io. Pathwise is dedicated to helping you live the career you deserve, providing coaching, content, courses, and community. Basic membership is free, so visit Pathwise and join today. Today, my guest is Racina Rasiopi. Racina is the president and chief executive officer of Women Unlimited, which is a women's organization for mentoring, education, and networking. She has led this organization for more than 26 years. And in this capacity, she spearheads initiatives to partner with organizations across a wide range of industries to develop their high-potential women and build a pipeline of diverse and talented leaders. Prior to joining Women Unlimited, Racina held executive management positions in human resources at a variety of firms, and she has over 25 years of experience in organization planning and development, compensation and benefits, training and development, safety, quality management, staffing and employee relations. She earned her doctorate in education from the University of Pennsylvania and also holds a master's of science in education from the University of Pennsylvania and a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Michigan State. Additionally, she serves on the advisory council of the University of Pennsylvania CLO Alumni Network, the advisory board of New Historia, and the advisory council of the Women's Business Collaborative, where she also chairs their training and development committee. Racina, welcome. Thanks for doing the show with me today.
I'm looking forward to the conversation, JR.
Me as well. So tell us a little bit of Women Unlimited.
Women Unlimited for the past 30 years has been working with corporations to help them grow their pipeline of female leaders. We provide experiential development programs for women at key inflection points of their career, early career, mid-career, and executive level. The women attend programs with other women from other companies. So imagine being in a room of 35 women, each woman from a different industry, a different functional background, and for their development journey, either 6 months or a year, they learn with and from one another. It is a leadership development program. We like to think about it as well as broadening their understanding of business.
And you do this through their organizations.
It's a great question, JR. The companies select the women to attend our program. So our programs are designed for high potential women, women that are ready for that next step, right? That either a broadening of their scope of responsibilities or moving to the next level. And so our programs, you can think of them as preparation for thinking about how do I recalibrate my skills as I'm moving to that next stage in my career? Because we know the skills that allowed us to be successful at one point in our career is not the same formula, right, that allows us to be successful at the next level.
Yeah. Well, it's like Marshall Goldsmith said, what got you here won't get you there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So is everything cohort-based?
Everything is cohort-based. The framework of our learning design is mentoring, education, and networking. You'll notice that the education piece is the, I'm going to say the topic or the focus of the competencies that's relative for those various levels. And it's bookended by two relationship skills, right? Mentoring and networking are critical skills for women to understand how that becomes really the strategy that creates momentum in their career.
When they get nominated for these programs, how long do the programs typically run?
Depends on which level. The early career programs are 6 months. The mid-career and the executive levels are a year. The women come together once a month. The various topics, you know, it's not really what we would think of as a traditional training program where they come in and we dump a lot of knowledge. It's more facilitated learning to spark the women's understanding around in this area, maybe it's communication or influence, What are the things that I'm doing that are working for me and helping me? What are some of the things I need to think about doing differently? The subtlety of their understanding, right? The way that we create a catalyst for understanding that they can then apply when they go back into their organization. And then when they come back, we talk about what worked, what didn't. The development becomes very ingrained and because of that, very sustainable.
Certainly learning experientially and sort of reflecting on it is a more powerful way than just, as you say, having a bunch of information dumped on you.
Right.
Others out there doing similar things, right? With a focus on women. You've been at this a long time. How do you differentiate, keep yourself differentiated?
There are many other organizations that are out there that are serving women directly and provide resources to corporations. What we do that is somewhat unique is that we work with the entire organization. We work with the women's manager throughout the development experience. And that's done intentionally to help them understand, of course, what's happening in this development program, but more importantly, what's their role as the manager to really allow the organization to reap the benefit of the learning that's occurring. How can the manager help the women apply the learning back into the organization? How can the manager maybe help the women stretch out of their comfort zone to maybe take on a challenge and get ready for that next assignment? We think of it as really partnering with the organization more fully. We also have senior leaders who participate as mentors, senior men and women, and that helps them get a more intimate understanding of what are the challenges women are experiencing in organizations. They mentor not women from their company, but from other organizations. Again, it expands their understanding. And of course, at the end, the organization benefits.
I've actually done programs like that where the deal is you can be in the program, but you got to bring somebody with you to be a mentor to somebody from another company. And it's a good way to do it. It's a way to kind of solve your problem of getting mentor type people into the mix of things.
And think of it as senior leaders, the development you need is really to understand what's going on outside of my organization. The mentors have access to other senior leaders from other organizations. That's a great way to expand your network. But it also helps them understand what are some of the nuances that I need to be aware of so that I can create a better environment for women to learn and grow inside the organization.
So what's the shape and size of your organization?
We do programs primarily in the U.S., but we also do programs outside the U.S. We're a small organization that serves larger organizations, a team of about 50 women that really have a strong background in business and organizational facilitation, because the key to the impact of our programs is having individuals who can really help the women get comfortable, be a little vulnerable, but that then facilitate their understanding of what they all can do differently.
You've been doing this since the late 1990s, right?
Yeah.
What led you into this space in the first place?
Well, to be honest with you, JR, the woman who founded Women Unlimited, Jean Ott, I met when I was head of HR in a chemical business. And she was talking about this company that she was starting to help women step up into leadership. At the time, I identified women in our company to participate. I became a mentor. And Jean and I became professional colleagues. After our youngest daughter was born, I left the corporate world and started my own consulting practice. Jean and I remained close. And then eventually she asked me to join her business. As it was growing so rapidly, it was more than what she alone could manage. Right. Over time, she decided to retire, and I bought the business from her. It allows me to do two things that I love to do. I'm intrigued with organizations. I'm intrigued with how can I help them be stronger and be better. And I also love working with people to help them figure out what is that spot, the role that really brings them that joy in the work that they're doing. You know, a lot of people, especially women, end up in roles that they are functionally capable of doing, but they're tired of doing it. And they don't know how to get out of that career corner that they seem to find themselves in. And so in the work that we do, we really help women understand you know, there's a whole set of skills that I can do. What's that subset when I'm using those skills? I'm excited to go to work and do that work.
In the time that you've been involved, has the business environment changed for women a lot, a little, or not at all?
It's changed, certainly since we started 30 years ago. And the pandemic certainly added more challenges for women in general. I think there has been incremental shifts in the landscape for women, but certainly not as strong a momentum that you would think in 2024, right? I remember when I was inside organizations, people were like, well, you know, there was Title VII, so that's going to take care of everything. Women will be fine. But there's so much bias in the system, in the systems within organizations, and in the way women also understand how they need to navigate. So it's not just the organizations, it's not just the leaders, it's also the biases women have about themselves and their own capabilities that need to get unwound in order for things to work. We often say, or we often hear, well, meritocracy should work. Well, it would work if there was no bias in the system, but there's bias in the system. So we need to recognize, how do we get around that?
No such thing, certainly, as a perfect meritocracy. And
right.
It's an ideal, I guess, that we try to work toward. But, you know, it probably says a lot that I think if you ask most people sort of, what's the first thought, you know, when I say like envision a leader, most of them are going to think of a white man. And
right.
I think until that stops happening, there's always going to be that sort of undercurrent of bias, maybe not in a malicious way, but just in a unconscious bias, right? As the term is as described.
And we believe that while all those things can be true in organizations, you don't really know. You don't know if your leaders have that unconscious bias, but there are things women can do to help mitigate that bias, right? How do they self-advocate? And we hear, even today, I mean, we heard this when Jean started the business 30 years ago, and we consistently have heard it for 30 years, women are uncomfortable speaking for themselves.
Yeah.
They feel their work should speak for them. And if you go back to what I said earlier, if you're doing a job that you are functionally capable of, but you don't enjoy, so then what's it saying? Is it saying what you really want? And what we focus on a lot in the work that we do with women is, first, let's assess your skill set. And then let's diagnose of those skills, of your capabilities, what is that subset that you want to use as the springboard for your career? And then what's the story that you need to tell? And who do you need to tell it to? Who are those leaders in your organization that need to understand what you're bringing to the table? I often, when I'm talking to women in our programs, I'll say to them, you know, your leaders are constantly scanning the resources available to help the organization solve its problems. If they don't know what you're bringing to the table, if they don't know what you have currently to offer, they can't call on you. They can't put you in as part of the solution.
Let's shift gears, talk a little bit more specifically about mentoring, which I know is a big part of your program, as you mentioned. So you believe pretty strongly in the benefits of mentoring. Why is it so valuable to personal and professional development?
We don't really have a true understanding of what our capabilities are or what they can be by ourselves. I think that we need to have that thought partner who can help us create the plan to move forward. Mm. And mentors, developmental relationships are a crucial thing for all individuals, right? They help us think through the things that will help us move forward. I actually did my research when I was getting my doctorate on how mentor relationships informed women's development and allowed them to progress in their career. And what we saw is that when women have a clear sense of what, here's what I'd like to accomplish, I'd like to maybe get promoted to the next level, they can be more explicit around, here's what I'm looking for. And a mentor can help them map out some strategies to accomplish that goal. You know, it helps us not to just have that thought inside our head, but having that conversation, that developmental conversation, allows that breakthrough understanding of what you can do to move forward.
Was there a particular mentoring experience that you had yourself?
You know, I've been so blessed to have leaders who invested in me and in my development But I would say the most impactful one was with Jean. When she and I met, and then when I started working with her, she truly took me under her wing to help me understand the business, how to think about growing the business. And it allowed me to step into the role of buying the business and running it so seamlessly after she retired.
It's great when you have those mentors, I think, particularly in the earlier part of your career, because, you know, at that point, they can be a bigger accelerant, if that makes sense, than if it doesn't come until at some point later. It's good that you had that relationship with her and that it helped make the transition into your ownership of the business, you know, seamless, as you describe it. What do you think makes for a good mentoring relationship?
I think a few things. I think from an individual, if you're looking for a mentor, being intentional of what it is that you're seeking. Even if you're not really sure, it doesn't have to be a role, but maybe it could even be, I'm not sure what the next step is in my career. I need to have the conversation to help me get that clarity, right? You don't need to have a specific destination in mind, but coming with an intention of what you want to gain from the conversation is pivotal. Otherwise, you'll have some interesting conversations, but you're not going to really get anywhere. From a mentor's perspective, and what we work with mentors to understand, one of the things that is so critical is to ask really good questions.
Yeah.
Not only questions around what they want to accomplish, but to listen for what they're not saying, right? Are you hearing some hesitancy? Are you hearing uncertainty about what they want? And questioning about that to get underneath what might be some of the blocks for the individual to move forward.
I think the best mentors are really good askers of questions, right?
Yes, yeah.
And to your point, they can sort of hear what you're saying and hear what you're not saying and kind of poke at things and go deeper with you. If you get a mentor that just sort of wants to jump right to telling you what to do, it's not nearly as helpful,
right?
You know, because there's so much more power and you're sort of realizing things for yourself than having somebody else tell you.
Absolutely. You know, I often hear, well, I need a mentor that's in my industry or is very similar to me. I don't think that's so necessary. I often think that you're better served if you have a mentor that's very different than you, because if they're in different industries, different functional backgrounds, they don't understand your world. And so they're going to ask very specific questions to unpack. Oftentimes when we're with people that have similar perspectives than ours, similar roles to ours, you know, we kind of talk in a shorthand and then we step over what might be some of the critical elements of what we're looking to address.
I think if you've got a mentor from another industry, if they're good, they can bridge that gap, right? Because they can sort of overcome the lack of familiarity and they can use their lack of proximity to what you do as an advantage. You know, if they're not as good, they may struggle with it more, which may be why people will say to you that, you know, they'd like to have somebody in their industry just because there's going to be more commonality, shorthand, all of that. It kind of lowers the bar for a successful mentoring relationship, but you may also lose something in that respect.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we're not comfortable in this type of conversation with people, we can default to being judgmental. I don't want to talk to JR because, you know, he doesn't understand my world. He doesn't understand my company. I can put those barriers to engagement. And that's why the way that we structure mentoring in our programs, we set the stage not only with the mentors, but also with the participants. So by the time they meet their mentors, we've kind of cut through maybe some of those things that could be blocks for engagement.
Chemistry matters too, right?
I don't know. I think sometimes we over-index to chemistry. I don't always like everybody that I work with, right? I don't always have great chemistry with everybody that I work with. Yet I need to be effective with everybody that I work with.
Yeah.
So I remember one woman came to me right after she met her mentors and said, oh, this one gentleman reminds me of all the men that are at the senior level that are so difficult. And she was like, not happy. And I talked to her a little bit and I'm like, well, do you need to be effective with those leaders that you find so off-putting? Yes, she does. Well, might not this be a great way for you to learn? If this mentor is giving you that as an example, You can use it to build your ability to be more comfortable when you're dealing with people that you are not feeling that chemistry, right?
Yeah.
And so I think chemistry, I don't want to dismiss it completely. It's an element. Yeah. You don't have to have it because mentors always give you something to learn. I can remember as a young child coming home from school and my mother saying to me, well, what do you think about your teacher? I'm like, oh, I don't like her. You know, I don't like her. She's, you know, whatever. And my mother said to me, well, I guess you have a lot to learn from her. And so I think we need to look at mentors that way. They all give us a gift if we're willing to learn.
Certainly with some, it will be easier than it will be with others. And I think that goes two ways. You know, I've been on both sides of this equation and you've been on both sides of this equation. Yeah. And some of them are sort of much easier to develop. Some of them are much harder. I think the matching programs, you know, that many companies do, they have a lot more variability. You know, at the end of the day, both parties have to really come in committed, right? Committed to have their ears open, committed to really bridge the gap, committed to do their part, right? You know, a lot of mentees look too much to the mentor to kind of carry the load for them. And really, the mentee is the one who needs to kind of carry the load. They're the one who is trying to get something specific out of it.
And the way that we design our program is the mentee owns the relationship. They drive it. They declare the focus of it. And that's done with intention to so that the women step up and lead the process. It's important for them to declare what they want. It's not for the mentor to tell them what they should get.
Do you have particular tools, frameworks that you recommend to people as they're trying to develop those mentoring relationships?
I think that there are opportunities around them. I think before you pursue a mentor, to take some time to take stock, right? To assess what is it about the work that you've done, the experiences you had that you really enjoyed? What is it about it? Is it, I like when I'm interfacing with a client, or I like when I'm deconstructing an issue and can solve the problem. What is it about the work that you've done that you enjoyed? What are those things that you don't want to do anymore? So to do that reflective exercise to understand what in the heart of this that you want to build the mentoring relationship on. And then I would say you need to just look for people that are comfortable having that dialogue with you. One of the things that I'm fascinated about is once you've had a mentor, how does that shape or inform how you build relationships moving forward? And what I've heard from a lot of the women that have been in our programs is that they start being more forward thinking about who might be a potential mentor for them. And they may approach someone when they've completed a project or completed a presentation and ask a leader for some feedback. Not just say, may I have some feedback, but ask some specific questions. And then based on how comfortable they are and how forthcoming they are with their comments, then they may schedule another conversation. I don't think you can go up to someone and say, JR, will you be my mentor? But we could, based on a conversation, I may ask you some questions and see how forthright you're going to be, how comfortable you might be in giving me some guidance. And then I might say, well, can we follow up and have another conversation? Would you be open to that? Sometimes I think that informal approach then helps you create a cadence of conversations with some potential mentors.
Education is another part of your program, the E in women.
Yes.
I know you're a big believer in the idea of lifelong learning. How have you applied that in your own life?
Gosh, you know, JR, if I could have figured out how I could have earned a living going to college my whole life, I think I would have done that.
Well, you went for a PhD, so you gave it a good long run.
So I did do it a long time. I always look for opportunities to meet with people outside of my normal group, right? Since we work with a lot of organizations, I try and talk with people in academics, people that I went to grad school with who are in different industries, so that I can get kind of an outside in view of the work that we're doing. What are some things we should be thinking about maybe that we're not thinking about in the work that we're doing? So I have a network of people, both in corporations and outside, that help broaden my understanding of the work that we're doing. I'm part of a couple of different think tanks that kind of, again, pull my challenge my thinking, I should say. And so those are the things that help me. I'm going to say, I think it's Stephen Covey who talks about sharpening the saw. So I'm always looking for those experiences that help me do that.
You know, it's funny for me, when I started doing this podcast, because I've always been interested in people's career journeys. And I started with people that I had worked with in some capacity. So it was mostly, you know, or gone to school with people I knew, right? Some of them I hadn't kept up with in a while, you know, but I at least had some level of connection to them. And it's funny, as it's evolved, you know, more and more, the people that I meet with, like, come to me typically through a PR agency. And, you know, I get to meet people like you and others who I probably wouldn't have otherwise. It's turned into a great way for me to expand my network. It's turned into a great way for me to hear perspectives from people who are just in a kind of a very different space than I am, right? And I would say it's been kind of an unexpected, I guess I hadn't really thought about where this might ultimately go, but it's been an unexpected bonus to be able to talk to people who do such different things than what I do and have had such different career journeys, you know, and you can learn something from everybody, even if they do something really different. So for me, that's been really useful.
Exciting, right? But it also helps you then go back into your work that you do with a little bit more of a renewed energy.
Yeah, it's certainly fresh perspectives. And, you know, even if you don't consciously think about applying them, they're, you know, they're in there. You know, one way or another. Absolutely. What are the biggest learning needs of the women that come into your programs?
What we hear most often, what I see most often, is really understanding in the roles that I have, what are the most important things for me to focus on? Like, I don't need to do everything, but I need to do those things that are going to be aligned with the organization's goals well. I don't need to do things perfectly. And it's funny because we had a graduation of one of our programs yesterday, and that was a theme. Like, I realize I'm too much of a perfectionist. I remember in one organization, we embrace a quality philosophy. And one of the elements of the quality philosophy is whatever the customer wants, you deliver that with excellence. And what I see often happening with women is that may be what the customer wants, but I can do this much more. And so they end up over-delivering and then getting frustrated when people don't acknowledge that bonus effort. Well, if the customer wants X, give them X and make it on point, but don't give them more because you're giving them more energy than what they're paying for. When women can kind of hone in that need to do everything perfectly, they're going to have the bandwidth to take that a step back and say, of all everything that's on my plate, what are the things that are going to be important? And they can manage their effort more strategically.
I mean, it's almost impossible to give an A effort on everything. More. Some of this also is just agreeing, like, where is most important that I give that A effort? Where can I turn it to B? And I think women more than men struggle with that, you know, that sense of, you know, needing to be perfect, needing to go the extra step. And I mean, certainly I've seen that as a common theme with people that I've worked with over the years.
Yeah. And the other thing is their comfort and capability to self-advocate, to talk about what they bring to the table, what they're excited about, and advocate for those other opportunities in front of them. Because people aren't going to come knocking on your door and hand you the package. You have to be pursuing it.
Yeah. And there's also, you know, the sort of tale you hear often that men will apply for positions that they really aren't qualified for. Women won't apply for position. And then they meet every single bullet point on the on the job description. I literally was having this discussion with my daughter, who's a PhD student recently. And she's like, well, they say they want a postdoc. Do I have to go get my postdoc to be able to get this job when I finish my PhD? I'm like, nope, let them turn you down.
It's just a guideline. It's not necessarily. It's interesting. I did a project in this one organization. We were looking at women that were at the C-suite, our president level in organizations, and we interviewed them to understand what were some of their experiences that helped them get to that level. Yeah. And this one woman who is now president of an organization, Fortune 50 company, shared a story in early in her career. She had small children at home and she was offered this job. And she said to her boss, I can't take this job. That guy is out every night of the week with customers. I have small children at home. I can't do this. It'll turn my life upside down. And her boss said to her, Who said I wanted you to do the job the same way he's doing it? I want you to do the job the way you think it needs to be done. And I think that's what women miscalculate, right? They look at jobs and they say, well, I can't do what he's doing. And at the end of the day, the job is meant to create an impact. How could you step into that role? What would you do? How would you approach that job? So those are the things you should be thinking about, not, oh, wait, I don't have the 29 things on the checklist.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of opt yourself out, right? And, right. You know, there's times where you'll look at a job and go, yeah, there's no way I could do that. But I think, you know, there's just a difference. You know, women need to be more open to putting their name in the hat, right? Advocating, to your point, for themselves in places where they're not perfect in every way for the role, and they'll do it differently than the person before them and after them. And that just comes with the territory.
There was a woman in our program that shared a story that she saw a position open in her company. She applied for it. And then she looked more deeply at the position description and withdrew her name, was talking to one of her colleagues, a gentleman she worked with, who, as she said, did not even have half of the qualification she did, but he applied for it. And the leader whose position this was came to her and said to her, I saw that you applied, withdrew your name. Why did you do that? And she said, well, I looked at the requirements. I wasn't sure. And he said, no, we want you in this job. Put your name back. We want to go through the process. We put this in place because we want you in this job. Anyone who's listening to this, who is doubting themselves, take a second look, because you really shouldn't be taking yourself out of the running.
So let's talk about networking. What are some of the unique needs that women have when it comes to networking?
The challenges that women have is that they often do not have the relationships that keep them informed, right? Women tend to get more, and research tells us this, and I hear this from the women in our programs, they get more transactional information around the work that they're doing, but they don't get enough information that helps them understand what's around the corner. What are those opportunities, right? So when you think about networks, you need to think about who are those people that are in your span of relationships? Who are the people that I would say fall in the bucket of those personal relationships that will give you feedback around how you're showing up, maybe what you're doing well, what maybe you can do differently? Who are people in your network that help you understand how things get done in the organization? And when I talk to people, especially women, they tend to have a few people on the personal, a lot in the operational. What they fail to have are people in what I would call in a strategic bucket. Who are the people that help you understand the opportunities in the business and the themes and what's going on in your industry? And because my career has always been in HR, I've always had a broad group of people, not only that were in HR, but also in a lot of different companies that helped me be informed around what was going on. In order to be effective as a leader in HR, you have to have a relationship across all the senior leaders in your organization so you understand what they're dealing with so that you can better serve and support them. I also had to work with other people outside in outside organizations, other functions, so that I was better prepared as a business person to understand how can I shape HR for the needs of the business.
I guess I'm curious though. I mean, that sort of, there's a limit to that circle that you've just described, whether it's personal or operational or whatever. I mean, to some extent, go to the conversation we were having a few minutes ago, but people who are a step removed or maybe two steps removed, you know, from what you're doing, where does that kind of fit into your thinking about what's important for women in building their networks?
Women tend to get comfortable with the people that they know. So, you know, if you have a network where it's people that are very similar to you, they're not challenging your thinking, then it's going to limit your view of what opportunities might be. In fact, one of the women yesterday graduation said, I learned to build a network of people that challenged the way I think. And that's what I think is so important. I've always had the benefit of having a network of people that expanded my thinking. But if your network is an echo chamber of similar thoughts and similar beliefs, then you're going to be limiting what might be opportunities for you.
So when the women come through your program, what practical things are you doing with them to help them develop their networks?
As part of the framework of the learning that occurs in our program, we help them expand it just within the program. They're put in peer teams. There's different ways that we frame the learning. So they're interacting with people that they wouldn't typically interact with, would it not be for the program. We also ask them to do different things, network and have conversations with people inside their organization. So it helps them expand their network inside the organization as well. And what's interesting is that the women, then it's like, oh, first of all, when you ask people to meet with you, they'll meet with you. So even when the program's over, they'll continue those habits of meeting with people so that they're better informed around what's going on in their company.
And do you offer some form of ongoing community network for people who've gone through your programs?
Yeah. So we, all of the women that once a program is completed, we have an alumni group that we have quarterly meetings, we have newsletters. So there's a way for them to stay connected. Many of the women that have gone through our programs, then advance in their career, come back as mentors. Mm-hmm. There's ways to stay connected with us for the longer term.
That's great. For people who are more introverted, what advice do you give them about getting into the networking game? Because it just feels uncomfortable to them more so than to an extrovert.
It feels artificial, which is why it feels so uncomfortable. I would say for someone who's more introverted, I would say start small. Whether you're introverted or extroverted, the fact remains that you need to build relationships with people. I would say just push yourself to meet with someone maybe that you haven't talked to that much, but they know your name. Have a conversation and then keep building it out a little bit broader. The way that we break out of our comfort zone is by little steps, but you need to act your way into it. So I would say just do it. Once you do it the first time, you'll get a little comfortable and you'll be even more comfortable the second time you do.
You have a lot going on. I mean, you're running an organization, you're on multiple advisory boards. How do you kind of keep all of this going?
Each element of the things that I'm involved with feeds into and supports kind of my core business. I think that as a leader and as someone who's running a business, I know where to spend my time in order to achieve the goals that I have for the business. And so everything that I do is very purposeful. Working on an external board, a lot of the relationships and the insight I get from those boards helps me think differently about the work that I do at Women Unlimited and vice versa. So it's a matter of having boundaries and knowing where my value is and being purposeful about my day.
Would you describe yourself as having a high degree of self-discipline?
Yes, I do. I have standards around my time, and so don't like to waste people's time, and I don't like it when people waste my time. I'm very judicious about what I do every day.
And what are some of the routines or habits that help you stay focused on the things that are going to bring the most value?
I listen to a lot of podcasts or different masterclasses just to kind of extend my understanding or think about things differently. I'll spend time every day, and I've done this, I think, throughout my career, just identifying what are those buckets of things that need my attention, and that's where I'll spend my time. I think that's the hardest thing as you start evolving your career, where you're not actually doing and executing the work. You know, a lot of the work is gathering insight and information so that you're able to make decisions to move your business forward. That means you're talking to a lot of different people and just doing a lot of that gathering.
It's probably harder when you're an entrepreneur, when you are the face of the business as you are, and you have to think about what's really important that I do myself and what would I prefer to delegate. And there's a lens in that of like, what's really important that I show that I'm doing myself?
Yeah. The other secret is I am blessed with a wonderful team of people that I've worked with, some for many, many years. And so their expertise just adds to and augments my perspective. And so we're able to achieve a lot, even though we might be a small team.
Is there a time of day when you're most productive?
I like to use the morning more for reflection, because once the day starts, then you hit the ground running.
Yeah. And when you look back, what strengths would you say have helped you consistently over the course of your career?
Being open to feedback. not being defensive, really just when someone gives you their perspective, being curious about why they see things the way they do, so I can decide, you know, what I do with it. I had to learn the difficult transition for me was moving from the person that did it all to the person that was leading others that were doing it. That was a difficult transition because I was good at what I did. And so I expected people to do it my way. Once I understood that there was more than one way to get things done, then that was easy for me to let go.
That's a tough transition for a lot of people.
And we see a lot of people getting stuck, men and women, you know, like you're being told you're great because you do X so well, then it's hard for you to let go of that and let other people do it.
I mean, you see these progressions, and I've gone through them certainly in my own career, where it's like you go from being an individual contributor to a manager. So you have to learn how to delegate work, how to trust others to get things done, how to coach them. And so you go through that transition and the letting go part that we were just talking about. Then you move up and you realize at some point the breadth of your organization means you no longer can know everything that's going on every single day across the group.
Yep.
It's just not possible. And then you move up even more and you realize you might not even know everybody who works for you. And then it really becomes about how you create the system, the people systems, the management systems. And, you know, those are all tough transitions. I mean, you mentioned at the outset that you work with women at different levels. And I'm sure, you know, you see all of that I've just mentioned in the different levels that you work with.
I think it's also important to be open to thinking, well, there's something new for me to learn, that there might be a different way to approach it. I certainly know that I don't have all the answers, but I'll be curious to find the answer together with others. And so I think that's that transition, right? It's not just about me finding the answer. It certainly is much better when we get a group of smart people working on the same thing, coming up with the answer together.
Last question. What's one thing you know now that you should learned or known at the beginning of your career?
That it's not just about being right. It's about getting things done in the right way at the right time.
It's very true. It's sort of like applying the political lens on things or the practical
Absolutely.
Lens on things.
Would have saved a lot of arguments that I had with people.
For you and probably a lot of other people too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. And it was a nice conversation. So it's good to hear what you're doing and the work that you're doing with so many women, you know, and the companies that you support.
Thank you, JR, for the conversation. Enjoyed it immensely. And good luck to your daughter as well in her journey.
Yeah, she's got to get that PhD done first. That's her priority.
One step at a time.
Yeah. All right. Well, take care. I want to thank Racina for joining me today to discuss Women Unlimited, mentoring, education, networking, and a little bit about her own career journey and how she manages. All of this is consistent with the idea of taking control of your career. So if you're ready to do just that, visit pathwise.io. And if you'd like more regular career insights, you can become a member. It's free. You can also sign up on the website for the Pathwise newsletter and follow Pathwise on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Career Sessions, Career Lessons. We hope the nuggets of wisdom shared today help guide your path to the successful career of your dreams. This podcast series is part of Pathwise.io, which is here to help you live the career you want. We provide a comprehensive mix of career and professional development events, insights, tools, and exercises backed by a group of leading coaches and other career management experts. If you aspire to something more or just something different in your career, join us at pathwise.io. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. See you again on the next episode.